Hello, and welcome to What is Innovation? The podcast that explores the reality of a word that is in danger of losing its meaning altogether. This podcast is produced by Outlast Consulting, LLC, a boutique consultancy that helps companies use innovation principles to solve their toughest business problems. I'm your host, Jared Simmons, and I'm so excited to have Rob Morgan. Rob Morgan is a marketing professor at the University of Alabama and directs the STEM Path to the MBA and Create Path to the MBA programs. Rob attended pharmacy school at the University of Kansas, completed his MBA at the University of Dallas, and his PhD in business at Texas Tech University. Rob researches and teaches marketing strategy, innovation, technology commercialization, and marketing in emerging markets. Rob, thank you so much for joining us today.
You bet. I'm happy to be here.
We had a chance to sort of chat briefly a couple years back about your program and what you all do there at the University of Alabama. You know, as a proud alum of the College of Engineering there, I'm so excited about what you've created and built in terms of this program. And I'm excited that I got through before it was invented, because I'm not sure I would have made it in.
Well, I definitely would not have made it in, but it's been a terrific experience.
It's amazing. It's amazing. So why don't we jump right in? Tell me, what is innovation?
That's really a great question, and tougher than it sounds. But I guess to me, innovation is really finding new solutions to problems that people encounter. And, you know, my background most recently is marketing for the last 30 years. Before that, as you mentioned, I was in healthcare. And, you know, you might lean towards thinking that it's, you know, innovation is all about creating new products or creating new businesses, but we have people that innovate all the time in other kinds of ways. You know, innovations in public policy, innovations in organization structures, innovations, kind of everything that you can imagine. But to me, it's new approaches, usually involving creativity, but is a lot more than creativity in solving problems that people have.
Right, right. That makes a lot of sense. You mentioned that it's creativity, but it's more than that. What else do you see beyond creativity being necessary for innovation?
To me, you can be creative and not solve problems, right? Earlier, before we got started here, we were talking about art, and art definitely is a creative endeavor. But I would not say that art in itself as a creative act is solving a problem, and therefore I don't see it as an innovation. But at the same time, I can't rule out that, you know, clearly there have been innovations in art, in painting, in music, you know, in sculpture. Over time, there have been lots of innovations in how people do those things. But individual pieces of art or individual pieces of music, I don't see as solving problems.
I see. So in each of those domains, the act of generating the art itself, music, painting, what have you, there are tensions or problems that are involved in producing those things, and solving those types of problems can sometimes require innovation. But the output itself, to be enjoyed in itself, isn't an innovation because it doesn't solve a problem.
Right.
I see. Yeah. So that kind of leads into my next question, which is, what isn't innovation?
So I think innovation to me, and I'm kind of biased, but to me, innovation is one of the greatest phenomena, greatest forces in our lives. And like a lot of other things that would probably fall into that that very small, you know, group of phenomena, a lot of things get labeled innovation that probably don't quite reach the level of innovation. Maybe they are just creative, or maybe they're just doing something different than what we're used to, but it might be that it has been done that way before, and so it's not really new.
Right.
That it just kind of came back around as being in style or something. So to me, in order to, you know, to reach the level of being innovation, it has to be something new, solves a problem, usually involves creativity.
And what I hear from what you're saying is you're not saying those things don't have value, because you clearly love and enjoy art. You're just saying that there's a difference between something that is valuable and something that is innovative.
Right.
Yeah.
And some innovations may not be all that valuable.
Right. Oh, interesting. Yeah.
Because they could solve a problem, but it's not a common problem, or it's not a huge problem. Or...
Right, right. Which is an interesting distinction to talk about with a professor, because that is one of the traditional knocks on traditional academia and academic circles. Might solve problems, but don't always have an eye toward value or impact.
Right. Who cares?
Right. And have you come across that in your career?
Sure. Like on a regular basis, everybody that's in academics, I think, it's just a human thing that you think that what you create is clearly valuable, and the solutions to problems that you come up with, you wouldn't waste your time on small problems, that kind of thing.
Right.
But in the scheme of things, it's not coming up with a mRNA vaccine or something, which is huge.
Right. And, my frustration with that view of academia is you could level that same criticism to every R&D organization I've been a part of or experienced or coached or consulted with. The academic world does not have hasn't cornered the market on niche innovations. Yeah. And I think that's what's so exciting to me about the program that you direct, is it just takes that whole conversation and just sort of completely obviates it, takes it off the table, because everything you do in this program is tied to an impact or an outcome that is relevant to I will call them a client,
right,
for lack of a better term. Can you talk a little bit about those programs?
So the two programs that I currently run, and we have some other formulations that we just haven't been able to get approval to move forward with, the STEM Path to the MBA and the Create Path to the MBA. The STEM Path to the MBA was the first that we created. And basically what we do is we recruit incoming freshmen who have demonstrated that they're very strong academically, high school GPAs and ACT, SAT. Scores, that kind of thing, who are planning on majoring in a STEM discipline, which, the National Science Foundation definition of STEM is really very, very broad. And so we limit it to engineering, life sciences, physical sciences, mathematics, and all of the pre-health professions. So we have a lot of pre-med students, pre-dental students, pre-pharmacy, that kind of thing, and nursing students. But about 82% of the students in our program in STEM are in engineering, computer science.
Mm-hmm.
The Create Path to the MBA came along. We developed it a year later, but didn't introduce it for about 4 years later. After that, is the same thing, going after students that are high achievers coming out of high school, that are majoring in what we think of as disciplines that involve a lot of creativity. So early on, we were thinking music, art, dance, theater, that kind of thing. And then we started adding in, advertising and public relations and apparel and textile design, other kinds of endeavors like that, English. And we've also added foreign languages because they tend to be tied to that sort of thing.
Okay.
So the students come in, and beginning in the fall of their freshman year, they take a 1.5 credit hour, so 75 minute once a week, what we call STEM business honors class. And they do that every semester while they're undergrads. During their junior year, they formally apply to the MBA program. If they're admitted, they take 3 MBA courses the summer between their junior and senior year, come back and do their senior year, graduate, do another summer of 3 classes, and then do a fall and spring of MBA classes to finish up the MBA.
I see.
The undergraduate courses were part of what I see as sort of the innovation in what we've done. In the United States, we've had for a long time what were called 3-2 programs in business, where somebody would do some major, usually a business major, for 3 years, and then add on a 2-year MBA after that and get both degrees. And then there were also plus one, so 4+1 kinds of programs.
Right.
They worked out that it was just 1 year. The difference that that we originally had with our program was that they were getting business education from the get-go as soon as they arrived on campus.
Right. Okay. So it, in the 3-2 or the 4-1s, it was, you know, for me, it would have been 3 years of engineering and then 2 years of business, but I'm not in that business environment for those first 3 years. I'm not thinking in that mode.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so ours is for most students, a 5-year program. Some do it in 4 years by finishing their undergraduate in 3 years, and some, you know, do a year of co-op experience. And so they're finishing in 6. But yeah, so our students are taking business classes with us when they start as freshmen. And we limit the size of the sections of the classes to 35, which at a large public university, you know, we have 38,000 students. Wow. Having a 35 member class every semester, where we encourage them to stay with the same 30 or so kids, is really unusual, and it gives them sort of an anchor that they wouldn't have otherwise. And then we encourage them to stay with the same instructor for the first 3 years,
mm-hmm.
which originally we were kind of thinking that that would help us with retention, but it's done so much more than that. Because, you know, at a large public university, you usually don't have the same instructor more than once, you know, one semester.
Right.
So these students will see us for 6 semesters until they go into their senior year.
Wow.
So it's really been a good experience. And then we've continued to innovate. 2 years ago, we started adding in some training for them, where there's a group that started at the University of Pennsylvania about 25 years ago, studying what goes right with people from a mental health perspective that leads to people that have, you know, very positive mental health, instead of what typically was happening in psychology, where they were looking at people that had negative issues with their mental health.
Right.
So it became this subfield of psychology called positive psychology. And mm-hmm. they've done a lot of research to find out what it is about people that have very strong positive mental health. And we incorporated their research into an ongoing journaling exercise that the students start their freshman year and do each semester for 6 semesters.
Wow. A multi-year journaling process.
Yeah.
Through some of your most formative years. That's gotta be fascinating.
In a business class.
Yeah. That's innovative. That is definitely innovative.
So that's been a strong, you know, innovation, I think. And then we also, so we're big believers, as, you know, coming from the business school, as you probably would expect, that innovation is what drives the growth in our economy.
Uh-huh.
And that there are probably no better students to try to teach innovation to than these kinds of students, you know, STEM and sort of creative majors that are strong students to begin with.
Right.
And so they do 2 team-based innovation projects each semester, each one lasting for 7 weeks. And it's just amazing to see how their teamwork skills improve, their communication skills, their presentation skills, but more importantly, their ability to solve problems in an innovative way is pretty amazing.
Wow. And are these projects standalone things that you all come up with as a faculty, or do you have external sources for these projects?
Most of it is our, you know, projects. So we give them a theme for each one of the 7-week projects. And we start out with sort of softball kinds of things. The fall freshman semester, the first project is go find a local business and do several interviews with the folks involved with that business and develop a business model for them, you know, sketch out what their business model is.
Mm-hmm.
The second project is usually Internet of Things, you know, and so the students relate to that everything that we buy anymore seems to have a chip in it that connects to the internet. So
right.
Find a way to use that technology to solve a problem for somebody.
Oh.
And then eventually we get into, you know, more difficult problems, like Alabama is very much a rural state.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a lot of poverty in rural Alabama. I grew up in Kansas, and in rural Kansas, we had, you know, same kinds of issues. And most of the students in our program, about 75% of them come from outside the state of Alabama and not from rural areas. And most of the students who we have that are from Alabama are not from rural Alabama.
Right.
So it's difficult for them to kind of get their head around what it would be like living in a rural area in America today, where you probably don't have very good access to the internet. In a lot of places, they're living in food deserts where they're getting most of their meals. They're buying the materials to prepare the meals at gas station, convenience store kinds of places.
Right. Healthcare is not
healthcare is terrible.
Yeah.
We have a county that 25% of the homes in the county don't have complete plumbing, things like that. And so
25%. Unbelievable.
And over half the counties in the state don't have an OBGYN. So there's issues with maternal health care and that sort of thing.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
I grew up in Alabama, born, raised, and educated. And some of those numbers, don't surprise me, but those two are shocking.
I'm guessing most states that have a large rural population probably have the same issues.
Wow.
So the students do a lot of, work around, they can choose healthcare, education, water and sanitation, or food deserts.
Mm.
And, really dive into one of those four areas and come up with an innovative solution. So then you start seeing them getting away from it. They're not necessarily having to come up with an idea for a new product. It might be that there's a new organization or, a nonprofit or something to serve people.
That's fantastic. And it I would imagine it's not the, the dentists and the nurses that are doing the healthcare stuff,
right?
Or the, engineers, the chemical engineers that are doing the water sanitation stuff. I would imagine it's not domain specific that way.
Right.
Yeah.
And then you can also imagine it's a lot easier to understand why they have problems with diabetes and cancer screening and that kind of stuff.
Right. Amazing. It's great because the caliber of students, I think, I can't remember the numbers you quoted when I first learned about this program, but just to get into be part of this program, I mean, you have to be the best of the best from an academic standpoint.
Right.
And so to be able to deploy that kind of talent within the state on its toughest problems, that is the definition of innovation. And I'm excited to hear that as an alum and as a native of the state.
Yeah. They're very bright kids, but they have big hearts as well, a lot of them. Mm-hmm. So we like to give them lots of opportunities to sort of work on that.
That's a good combination. The world needs that combination for sure.
Right.
As you think about, comparing this STEM path to the MBA, the CREATE path, what kind of unique differences, what I'm curious, what led you to create the CREATE path? And how those two compare to each other, not in a good, better, or whatever, but any insights from having both programs?
I guess it's the capitalist in me. I think capitalism solves a lot of the world's problems if it's done right. And so you always want to grow.
Right.
That's kind of a principle.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was kind of never satisfied with how large the classes were getting, the incoming classes. Also, I think that it doesn't help the students that are coming from STEM disciplines to only be around kids that are from STEM disciplines, even though some are, in biology and others are in chemical engineering.
Right.
And so having some, more interdisciplinary teams and getting exposed to people that their strengths are quite a bit different from your strengths. And then to kind of get at your question about what are the differences between the two, kind of as you would expect, In a typical class, just because the CREATE path is a smaller program in terms of the number of students,
mm-hmm.
In a typical class, we'll have maybe 3 or 4 CREATE path students and 25 to 30 STEM students. Those CREATE path students are a pretty hot commodity when it comes time to divide up into teams to do these innovation projects.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Part of the philosophy behind it was that no matter what discipline you're in, no matter what major you're in 2021, technology is going to be part of your future.
Mm-hmm.
Innovation will be part of your future.
That's right.
Creativity is going to be part of your future if you're going to be successful, and business is going to be part of your future. So we want all of the students in the program to get all of those kinds of skills.
Right. That's well said. In their future, there's only more collaboration with more different types of people. So giving them exposure to diverse ways of thinking early on, I think is also another huge aspect of the program, and helping them understand how to recognize other types of talent, appreciate it, and leverage it in a team concept. I see a lot of folks in the corporate world struggling with that because you come out of these siloed professional training and into a world where you spend most of your working day with people who weren't trained the way you were.
Yeah.
Looking at your own career, you went to pharmacy school, you're a marketing professor, and you look at all these different aspects of things. How has your innovation sort of shaped your career through that progression?
I think that I've always been interested in creative kinds of things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's one of those things where we all get a thrill out of different kinds of accomplishments. And ever since I can remember, I got a thrill out of solving problems in a unique way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I didn't know that was called innovation or whatever. When I got out of pharmacy school and started working, I worked at a hospital in Dallas. I really enjoyed starting new programs and, you know, offering new services and that kind of thing. When I finished my PhD, I didn't want to do research that was an incremental improvement on what had already been done. I wanted to do something that was very different. And that can either pay off really well or, you know, the majority of the time that kind of research doesn't go forward.
Right.
And, you know, you take big risks and so you have potential for more flops. But when you are successful, it's a much more satisfying success.
That's well said. I can definitely resonate with that. The whole kind of the theme of what prompted me to start this podcast was just that, you know, you can call things innovation, you can call it whatever you want. But at the end of the day, everyone who, you know, there's this population of people who look at things a certain way, you know, want problems to be solved in a certain way, are, you know, obsessed with progress and step change differences and not this incremental point of view. And it's less about the domain you do these things in and more about that.
Yeah.
And there are people who just kind of get that, you know, and they're everywhere. And it's just fun to connect with people who think that way.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm okay with, you know, the incrementalist because it's still moving forward, but the leaps forward are a lot more fun.
They are. You take the incremental stuff to keep things moving, but the leaps are what give you the energy to come back
right. And
fight another day, or at least for me anyway.
Yeah.
So they are few and far between and hard earned in my experience.
Right.
Rob, any advice for innovators out there?
So I think that you have to have a thick skin because most people like the concept of change.
Mm-hmm.
Innovation involves change, and sometimes it's painful changes. And people think that they like the idea of change until it's change for them.
Right.
And so there can be a lot of pushback. I think within organizations, for young innovators, it's really important to find somebody that's going to be sort of your champion and have your back.
Mm-hmm.
I was really lucky when we started the STEM Path to the MBA program. I had a dean who had always, you know, supported trying new things. And it was kind of a big difference from what had usually been done, but he was very supportive of it and continues. He's retired, but continues to come back and speak to students and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So having a champion that has your back. And then also, I think you kind of got to always be on the lookout for collaborators because even though we think of innovators as being these, you know, lone innovators that do things by themselves and make great changes, the reality is most great innovations come from teams of people.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a whole lot more fun to do innovation when you're doing it with other people too.
Yeah. Very true.
So kind of have a lookout for other people that enjoy doing what you're doing.
That's great. The theme through that I'm taking away is innovation is more of a team sport than I think people always internalize. So looking for people that can, you know, provide support from above, but also the people around you that might be like-minded and able to sort of help you along the way.
Right. And that's a whole diversity thing too. They probably bring with them some different life experiences that you don't have and can add some, you know, little tweaks in there that make it successful when it might not have been.
Yeah. Oh, that's a great point because it's those tweaks that make the difference between, you know, a phone and an iPhone.
Right.
And you never know where that insight's gonna come from.
That's a great example.
One question occurred to me as you were talking about your advice. Do you see any differences in sort of the people that are coming into your program now, this newest crop of innovators, these high achievers, these folks that are coming through to enter the business world now, and people you interacted with, you know, early in your career out in the corporate world? How are the future innovators, do they look different? Do they sound different? What would you say about that?
You know, that generation, the group that are my customers right now, they get a lot of criticism that I think is undeserved. I am very bullish on our future when I spend time with current 18 to 21 year olds. Now I'm with a select group of them. Mm-hmm. I'm very blessed to spend my time with people who want to be really good students. Yeah, I think that the future is really bright, and it's amazing when you have given them some skills and some experience doing small innovation projects, what they come up with when they start being faced with bigger problems. Mm. So I'm bullish on the future with this group.
Glad to hear that, because you would know, and that makes me feel better. I'll sleep better tonight.
Yeah.
Dr. Morgan, thank you so much for your time.
You bet.
Appreciate it, and have a great day, and roll tide.
Yeah, roll tide. Thanks for what you're doing.
Thank you.
All right.
Take care. We'd love to hear your thoughts about this week's show. You can drop us a line on Twitter at OutlastLLC, OutlastLLC, or follow us on LinkedIn, where we're Outlast Consulting. Until next time, keep innovating, whatever that means.